Hey, everybody, what's going on? I'm going to be quick here because I want you to listen to this awesome show. It's the guest is Michelle Morrow, a very good friend of mine, one of my favorite friends in one of my group threads that I have. Super cool girl, super cool, talented artist, actor, all that jazz. And she, here's the deal. She's got a new show on YouTube Red Out on the Game Grumps channel called Good Game. And it's about competitive gaming and all that type of stuff. And she explains it all to me because I have no clue what any of that is. And it sounds super funny, super great. She created it. She co-wrote it. Dan Harmon's also involved if you like Community and Rick and Morty and all of that jazz. So, yeah, it's check it out on YouTube Red. Good Game is the name of the show. Comes out today, August 30th, which is why I'm releasing the podcast today instead of waiting a week because I want you to watch her show because she's a very good friend of mine and I want this show to be very successful and all of that stuff. So yeah, we'll just get right into it. Once again, I want to thank the Patreon users. I'm going to get rid of the $9 tiers because I don't feel like I'm doing enough for you. But I want to say thank you so much for the few of you that have done those, and I just appreciate it so much. Thank you guys so much for everything. You guys are awesome. Continuing to download and listen to the show and all that I've been getting word that there's a lot of new listeners. So thank you for that, and go back and binge all of the episodes we have and tell all your friends to do that and give us a good rating on iTunes and everything like that. And once again, just thank you for everything, guys. I appreciate it. And I know I said last time, I'm going to try and do more of these, but I'm really going to try and do more of these because talking with Michelle was so much fun, and I just want to talk to more people. So without further ado, today we learn number 168 with Michelle Morrow.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Today We Learned. This is a fun episode in the making and the building. And I'm also going to release this on a Wednesday instead of Mondays because she's a very special girl and she's got a very special show coming out today or tonight if I get this up on Tuesday night. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to lie. I know you have a show, but I can't remember the name of it, but I'm going to introduce you, then you're going to tell everything about your show here. One of my favorite people in one of my favorite group threads that I have with my friends that blows up my phone on the reg. Ladies and gentlemen, Michelle Morrow.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Is it Morrow? Morrow? How do you
Morrow.
Say it?
Morrow. Yeah, like okay. Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Okay.
Yeah, without the two.
Yeah, without the two. You have a YouTube. You have a YouTube show coming up.
Yeah, I do. It's called Good Game.
Good Game.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. GG. Kind of like it's because it's about esports. It's about okay. Video games. So at the end of any good esports match or any video game competitive that you play, people say GG and it just means good game.
Okay.
So it's about a misfit group of kids who decide to form their own team because they want to win $1 million in this new video game called Killcore.
Okay.
So they want to make this game, they want to make $1 million. So they decide to form a team of just random people they don't know. And they just got to form a team because they want to win $1 million. So it's kind of about the trials and tribulations. Sort of think Bad News Bears.
Okay.
Meets like Silicon Valley.
I love it.
Like that kind of thing. And these guys are just trying to make it up against like the big organizations of esports teams that have a shitload of money to like sponsor them. Can I say shit?
Yeah, you can say anything
okay,
you want.
Okay, cool.
You can say all
so
the words.
So they have a shitload of money.
Say all the words.
You know, because a lot of these teams, you know, in esports, they have chefs. They have personal chefs. They
is
have
it,
yoga
No, is this
instructors.
A real thing?
I swear to God.
This is a real thing.
I swear
I'm not
to
a
God.
I'm not a gamer.
Yeah.
Companies
mm-hmm.
pay video gamers
yes
to play video games.
That's right.
To win awards.
Yes.
Where do they get money from? Just because their team wins the? How is this a profitable business?
Okay. Well, so you have a video game,
especially
that you
with
like.
Chefs.
Yeah.
A private chef is not a cheap thing. Video gamers, what are you making? Like snack packs and Mountain Dew? Here
well,
you go.
I mean, that's kind of how you start out, right? I mean, like you don't have the personal chef at first.
Yeah.
So, you know, I created the show with my friend Jesse Cox. He's a
okay.
YouTuber and he used to own an esports team. And I've been a host in the esports world yeah. for a while. So we kind of combined our experiences and wrote some treatments and wrote a couple things. We're like, you know what? We wrote an episode arc and we thought, this is what we want to tell. Because we want to tell about the people who try to make an esports team without having money. Because how do you do it? How do you break into it, right? Because you're asking me all these questions like, what, is this a real thing? This is real?
It's like the movie industry. It's everything. How do you get into an industry that already has sponsors, I guess, if that is the case, like Mountain Dews or Blizzard or video game teams, whatever video game companies are called, the company that makes Portal 2,
are they
going to have a team? Does Valve have a team? Or
Valve actually has the biggest.
Is it like NASCAR teams where it's like you have, you know, Valvoline sponsoring a video game, sponsoring a bunch of nerds to play, you know, shoot 'em ups on Halo 19 or whatever.
I mean,
and then they win a purse of whatever.
Yes.
I'm good at video games.
So let's talk about the big teams, right? Let's talk about the big boys.
Yes, walk me through this.
So these are like, think of this like if we were talking about the NFL.
Okay.
This would be like the Seahawks and like all of the big teams. I'm not as big with football. So
okay.
But
sure.
but I picked
the Rams and the Lions.
Right.
The Bears, I think.
The Bears. So you get a bunch of like you think about the NFL and you think that there's only, you know, there's a certain amount of teams and they're localized, right?
Okay.
So the thing with esports is that teams are not localized by city at this moment. They're all over the world. So not only are they all over the world, but each one of them has different disciplines that they play in. So say you play for Cloud9, which is a big esports organization. Underneath their organization, they might have a team for Overwatch, a team for Dota 2, a team for Counter-Strike, a team for Hearthstone, and they League of Legends. And so they have each one of these teams, and each one of those teams might have 2 to 7 people that are on their roster depending on what the game is and how many players they need.
Okay.
And each one of those teams has a team manager that then manages the team and reports back to the organization.
Okay.
And then they are also responsible for gaining sponsorships. And sponsorships come from how likable you are, how good you are, obviously, and what your viability is in this world. So places like things like Soylent will sponsor people. Razer, they make keyboards and whatnot. Like NVIDIA, which is a graphics card company, they sponsor. And so they'll throw money at the teams and say, okay, we're going to make you just like NASCAR. They take their jerseys and they put their logos all over them.
Okay.
And so then they go on a Twitch stream and they stream live of them playing, like practicing, skirmishing, whatnot. And then when they go on to a tournament, that is also streamed live on Twitch. It's broadcast.
Okay.
So just like if you were going to watch the Super Bowl, it's on like NBC or whatever.
Yeah.
This would be on Twitch.
Okay.
And for Dota 2 in particular, Defense of the Ancients by Valve.
Okay.
This just about a month ago, it was the highest prize pool of all time for esports of $24 million.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Where does that money come from?
So that money comes from a couple different places. But what Valve did, which was really smart.
And this is all what your show is about, right?
Yeah, well, it's based on this.
Based on
this.
Okay.
So what like Valve did is they have the players who play Dota 2. So if you're playing Dota 2 and let's say you buy a skin or you buy something, a percentage of those sales will go into the prize purse. Not only that, but you can also donate to the prize purse. So
the players or anybody?
Fans.
Why would they want to do that?
Because that's just the culture of streaming. It's really, I wish I had a better answer for you. It's the most bizarre thing. Streaming to me is always still, it's just a crazy world. People will stream on Twitch. Just say if you wanted to, you're like, hey, I'm going to play Overwatch tonight. I'm going to play a video game. You play and you put yourself up on Twitch. You can make money. People can donate to you. They can subscribe to your channel for $4.99 a month. Or they can just they could just say, I like Razzle. I'm just going to give him $20. So that's kind of how. So these are the big orgs.
So 24 million people do that at a dollar a piece even.
More than that. Yeah. So like watching it, I think it was something like 60 million people watched it.
And that's
overall.
Just the purse. So there's got to be more donated.
24 million for the money.
That's just the winning prize.
That's
so
just the winning. That's the trophy prize. Total.
That's the pot.
That's the pot. And so the winning team, I think, took home somewhere around 9 million or something like that.
Okay. Because there's got to be more than that just to fund the actual events.
Yeah, so just to put the event on, now Valve puts that event on at the Key Arena in Seattle.
So Valve puts on their own events.
Yes, and a lot of them do too. So like Riot, for example, they run the LCS, League of Legends Championship Series.
Okay.
And they have teams all over the world. And they're divided by regions sometimes. They're divided by countries sometimes. Like Blizzard right now is doing a regional thing where it's the Overwatch World Cup, and they'll take, you know, people from all over the world. They're right now they're trying to actually localize, and they're saying, we want you to buy a franchise in each one of these cities. So currently, I think there's 9 or 10 cities that have been purchased. And right now the going price, I just want you to guess. The going price, like say if you wanted a franchise.
If I wanted to buy an esports team,
I want to have a team in Los Angeles.
Okay.
Blizzard.
Hey, Blizzard. BlizzCon down in Anaheim. Hey, guys, World of Warcraft, right? Do they make that game?
They do make that game, but World of Warcraft is an esport, but it's a much smaller esport. Okay. But like, say, so they're like, Overwatch is their big
Overwatch
one.
Overwatch
so
is their
like,
big one.
Overwatch, I want a team in LA.
I want a team in LA, and I want to name them.
The commissioner of the Overwatch League says to you, or whomever, says, cool, Razzle, that'll be 20 mil.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Just to have a franchise. Yeah. Just so Blizzard's making $20 million.
On each one of those. To own the city, to have the city be represented and localized. So they're going to be rolling out this giant localized esports league.
So they're going to, it's going to be like the NFL where you have a Los Angeles Dodgers versus the Los.
And they've got London, they've got
versus
Seoul,
the Orlando.
They've got Miami, they've got Atlanta.
Cheeto Fingers versus whatever.
Right. Yeah, Cheeto Fingers. Yeah. So
20 million.
This crazy, it's just insane. So you got to go. Okay, and then in each one of those teams, you know, it's just a bunch of kids.
They're not getting the 9 million splitting evenly.
Hell no, they're not getting the 9 million.
They're getting, what, 10 grand each or something,
well,
maybe?
Well, they have to split it evenly, and then they have to split it with their team, with their manager, and then their organization. Yeah. So they've got to pay it out as well. So it's not like they get the full 9 million, but it is split. So there is a split that takes place. Not all of us know exactly what all of those details are, but it is kind of a well-known thing in the esports world that players' rights are not taken care of very well. There is no players' organization or union to look out for them. And we're talking about 16-year-olds.
Why don't we start one?
We could.
Let's be the managers of nerds. And I don't say that in a negative way, but I mean, like,
it's fun.
I mean, a lot of, you know, a lot of gamers, they don't seem to be the capitalist asshole like me. So maybe we just, you know, the world.
Well, you
know,
you could make some grilled cheese sandwiches so they could eat, you know, or we could hire chefs to like cook for them. Well, that's the thing is like you have like these 16-year-olds who have never been out of the house before. Never had a real job. And now they're playing video games for a living. So we got to get them working out. We got to get them eating. We got to make sure that they're taking care of themselves. Yeah. So there's regimens that are put in place. So like Rick Fox owns a team, for example, like the NBA, and he owns Echo Fox, and he's really big about.
He owns from the NBA?
No. Oh. He owns. He's from the NBA. He was a Laker.
Okay. Okay.
But
he was a Laker. Now he owns an esports game.
Yeah. Team. Echo Fox.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah, and he has got I think 7 different disciplines now underneath his organization.
And that means the discipline is the game.
Different games, yeah. Oh, wow. So he has different games like Super Smash Brothers and H1Z1 and all of these different games, League of Legends. And so he makes sure that his players have like a good kind of athlete regime because he's used to that.
Yeah.
Not all teams get that sort of mentorship, I suppose, like because it's just young people helping other young people and sometimes it's not always good for the players. So even though they're all doing good things, the players kind of get screwed and don't sign very good contracts. So I did a show for Bleacher Report for about a year and I've been working with the esports community for a while from Blizzard. And I just started to see a lot of this stuff go down, you know, just seeing how extravagant all of the different team houses were, how they have pools and just everything. It's insane. It's like going to summer camp almost. Yeah.
And they just play video games all day. One game.
All day.
And get the best at it.
That's right. And I've gone to their practices before. It's really intense. And I was just like, man, this is wild. So I thought back in 2015, I was hosting what was called Heroes of the Dorm on ESPN2. It was the first time that video games, competitive video games, had been broadcast in this big of a way. There had been a couple other smaller ones that had happened, Dota 2 and whatnot, but I think Counter-Strike as well. But they were very small. This one was saying, it's called Heroes of the Dorm, based on the game Heroes of the Storm.
Okay,
clever
name.
Very cute.
Very clever title.
And each one of the teams
I'll give you $20 million for that title.
each one of the teams that were competing.
I could be a manager.
You could.
I'm
already sold. I'm like, you're in. You're in. Each one of the teams were competing for college tuition for the rest of their college careers. So they were no longer a part of, like, it wasn't Cloud Nine and TSM and all of the big teams playing. It was kids at the college trying to meet each other to say, hey, do you want to play this new game called Heroes of the Storm? And they're meeting online on Reddit and Facebook groups, and they're trying to just get together, make a team, be like, because they all have to be enrolled at the college.
Okay.
So that's how they found their teams. And I hosted it, so I was talking to a bunch of them, and the team's wondering how they got this together, how they formed their teams, and it just struck me as crazy. And afterwards, this crazy moment happened where I was talking to the losing team, Arizona, and there was the five guys standing in a circle. Not a lot of females are part of this, by the way. But
I know you say that, but I go to E3.
Yeah, that's different.
And as a not gamer, as a straight white dude, I go to E3, which is a gaming convention full of gamers. And there's so many hot gamer girls
totally.
That I wish I knew what gaming's was.
What gaming?
Like, it makes me want to be a gamer as a single white dude in LA who hates dating in LA.
Yeah, yeah.
I go to these conventions and it's like,
yeah.
Where do you girls hang out not playing games?
In their house.
Yeah, that's why I've never, do you know what I mean? That's why it's weird to me, because it's like, how do you meet these girls?
Yeah, I mean, that's how. So E3 is a little different because it's like, well, it's starting to have competitive gaming stuff there, but for the most, that's more like just traditional gaming.
Traditional gaming.
Yeah, and for these bigger ones, it's a little different. So we've got five guys standing in a circle after they lost. They're kind of bummed out. They're looking at their phones, checking Twitter, because it went crazy. All of these people online are like, what the hell am I watching on ESPN2?
Yeah.
I mean, people were pissed. Colin Cowherd, he's like a radio talk show guy about sports. He was furious.
Yeah.
He's
like an idiot.
He actually said he would rather put a gun in his mouth than ever host anything about esports. Like, what a thing to say. But
dummy.
Everybody kept talking about it because
he
was such a dick.
Leagues, probably.
Yeah.
It's the same
he was
thing.
Such a dick. Yeah. And we had, there was Michelle Beadle from ESPN. She was tweeting out, like, what the fuck is going on? And so now we've got these five guys checking Twitter, and they look, and one of them goes, oh my God, and puts the phone in the other friend's face. And he says, look, the quarterback of their football team at ASU tweeted and said, I don't know what the hell I'm watching on ESPN2, but go Devils. And they were all, and now I'm sitting here watching these five guys who have been fairly, like, you know, just gaming guys, now being recognized
flies
by the quarterback of their school being say, hey, go Devils. So, like, suddenly it was this cool moment where it just bonded everybody together for a second. Nobody was a nerd or a jock. It was just, hey, we're
Alma
Devils.
Mater, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it was this neat moment, and I thought, this needs to be a show. Like, if we turned this into it. So I just started to write about it, just started to create, you know, all these different scenarios based on my experiences and based on what I've seen. And then I brought on Jesse Cox, and he had a lot of stuff go down with his esports team, Stellar Lotus. But it was just a lot of crazy stories. And then finally, after a while, we met Dan Harmon.
Okay.
And
Community, Rick and Morty.
Yeah. And he's such a cool guy. And I was actually, the first time I met him, I went alone, and I was so nervous because I really love Community and Rick and Morty. And so I walked in, and it was the coolest, easiest meeting. He had two other guys in the room, and we just sat there for about an hour and talked through it. He just, much like how you are right now, being like, wait, what? People make money doing this? So I sat there and explained the whole thing. After a while, we had another meeting with him, and he brought on two writers from Rick and Morty, Erica Rosby and Sarah Carbiner.
Okay.
Awesome writing team. They just wrote the third episode, I believe, of season 3, Rick and Morty. But they're in the writer's room. They're awesome girls. They didn't know tons about gaming at the time. They knew they had written for a couple games, and their husbands are both involved in games as well. One of their husbands works at Riot. So we're like, that's a good pair. They understand comedy, obviously, and they'll pick up gaming really quick, and they did. So
I mean, gaming's really just the convention for the storytelling of these characters anyways, right?
100%. I mean, that's all we wanted to do is, you know, a lot of the people as we were going along
with
this,
not going
to
alienate non-gamers watching the show.
Not at all.
You know what I mean?
Like, the game is just kind of this fun thing that goes along with it. And that was one of the big kind of hurdles that we were facing when we were pitching to other companies, because they were saying, why don't you partner with League of Legends? Why don't you partner with Dota 2? You know, and we're like, well, then we're telling a story about League of Legends because it's such a giant community. we can't tell a funny story about relationships and about a bunch of people trying to start a team if we have League of Legends overshadowing it.
Yeah.
So we created our own video game to go in the series. A lot of people told us, no, we can't do it. And then we were like, fine, let's do it. So we called it Kill Core.
Okay.
Because Michelle Beadle during ESPN had tweeted out, kill the core, because at the end, you're always just supposed to kill the core in these games.
Okay.
So it's kind of like the touchdown.
Yeah.
So we're like, let's just boil it down to the easiest thing possible. And then we made all these really stupid characters like Bulbasaurus Rex, and I don't know, there's a lot of really dumb characters, and thought it would just be funny to sort of lampoon the MOBA community, which is multiplayer online battle arenas. It's a certain type of game, kind of like FPS, like shooters. So we're like, League of Legends is a MOBA. It's a dumb word. But
I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah, that's what theory. It is. So we thought, well, let's make our own video game on it. And luckily, YouTube, once we brought YouTube on, Jesse Cox had a relationship over at YouTube, and they were like, we would love to do this. They thought the game idea was fantastic, so they gave us a budget to create the game as well.
Get up.
I got permission from Blizzard Entertainment to create the game on their StarCraft II server. So I can't ship the game in its current form, and I can't, it's not balanced.
Okay.
Like, I mean, I could play you and one shot you and kill you.
Okay.
But it is playable.
It's a playable game for this world you created.
Yes.
So, I mean, you really did the ultimate world building.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It would be like if in Ozark or in Breaking Bad, I mean, and even Breaking Bad, they did have the meth that they made, but it was like, it was like sugar glass. It was like sugar candy or whatever.
Yeah.
And they sold that. So it's like, you know, to cement, to bring realism to the world that you created,
right,
you created a game that is even more immersive.
Yeah, and we had, before we had met with Dan, we had brought on our art director, Mark Gibbons, who had worked at Games Workshop and Blizzard Entertainment and Riot Games. He's an incredible artist, and we were so lucky that he said yes to us. So Jesse and I had meetings with him for months on end about what these characters would look like, what the map would look like, the feel of the game. It's kind of like it's all these characters from otherly worlds that are on the road to hell. They're all on the road to hell. So it's this, that's the name of the map. It's just like a purgatory, essentially. Okay. So, and they're battling it out. So we just tried to make it a really like macabre, bloody, you know, crazy rock and roll sort of world. It was really fun. So brought all the characters to life, and then we brought it to YouTube. We showed it to Dan. They loved it, and they said, let's do it. So we brought on a whole team, the guys, Odd Gentleman, who made King's Quest, the remake. And then because it had to go in the Blizzard game server, we had to reskin the entire game. So we couldn't use any Blizzard assets. We had to create all of it ourselves.
Oh, wow.
So then we had to find modders who will modify the game for us from the community. So we interviewed a dozen different people to say, can you do this? And we built a team of four guys. We called them the Mod Squad. So they took all the animations. So Mark made the concept art. Then it went to Odd Gentleman, who did the animations. And then it went to the Mod Squad, which converted everything into StarCraft II and then made the game actually playable.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a crazy endeavor.
So you created a TV show and a video game.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Thanks.
Let me ask you this, because let's go to a little bit about you. So you're born in Spokane, Washington.
Yeah.
Then you were raised in Seattle, right? Or you're...
I went to college there.
You went to college in Seattle, but you were born in Spokane.
Yeah.
Now... When did you move to LA?
The year 2000.
In 2000. Were you always a gamer growing up? Because
yes.
I also, and look, this is off of Wikipedia, so whatever. Commodore 64. It says you had a Commodore 64.
Yeah, growing up.
So did I.
Really?
Commodore 64 is some of the best games ever.
Did you ever play Jumpman?
Jumpman? Was that with the train? What was the one with the train?
He was like a little guy. It almost looked like a Donkey Kong-ish with like vines, like a pitfall meets Donkey Kong, and it was a little guy.
Jumpman, I played Jumpman.
Or Impossible Mission.
Load Runner. Impossible.
Oh, yes.
Holy
Impossible
fuck. Hold
Mission,
on, hold on.
Right?
Come, stay a while, stay forever. Nobody knows Impossible Mission.
Impossible Mission was so much fun.
Impossible Mission was one of the funnest games ever.
Yes, I agree entirely.
And nobody knows
about
that show.
No one does.
I'm so glad you know Impossible Mission.
Yes, I do.
Load Runner is another great game.
Yeah.
Zork was a fun game.
Choplifter. Did you ever play Choplifter?
Choplifter was great. Jawbreaker. Did you ever play Jawbreaker?
I don't know about Jawbreaker.
Jawbreaker was kind of like Pac-Man, only it was like with a jaw, and you'd have like You'd have a mouth chewing things, and then you would brush its teeth and things like that.
I did have Tooth Invaders.
Okay, I don't know.
Which
that
like
one.
You had to actually fight plaque. I think it was my parents' way of trying to get us to brush our teeth.
Q-Bert, obviously.
Yeah.
So Commodore 64. So yeah. You've
and then on my 9th or 10th birthday, I got a no, it had to have been earlier than that. No, it was about my 9th birthday. I got a Nintendo Entertainment System.
Okay.
So I was the first kid on the block with the NES. So after school, it was all about like playing ice hockey with, you know, if you remember the old ice hockey, it had like the skinny guy, the medium guy,
Blades
the fat
steel,
guy.
Or no?
No,
like
it was before
RBI
that.
Ice
it
hockey?
Like, it was before. It was just like you could pick what country you're from.
Okay.
And then you could pick the size of your guys. They could be skinny, fat, or medium. So it was like Three Little Bears kind of thing. It was very odd. But loved that game. Loved all of
1988 NES. Video game, ice hockey. Let's see if this is the cover you're thinking of.
Yeah, it's blue. Yep. Mm-hmm. I have it in my bedroom.
It was came out in 1988. Ice hockey video game originally for the Famicom Disk System, which is the Nintendo in Japan. Ice hockey is based on the sport of the same name. Mm-hmm. Right on. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it was super fun. I loved that game. But I loved all of Nintendo. I really fell in love mostly with Legend of Zelda.
Okay, great game.
The original, that was my favorite. And then, you know, as I grew up, I started to play in high school. I started playing Myst, which is a beautiful world game where you just really have to explore. You play the.
It's kind of like Return to Zork. I feel like.
I don't know Return.
Oh, it was like the sequel to Zork, but it was like Myst. It was like I played Return to Zork a lot, and then everybody was like, "Oh, you got to play Myst." Mm. And then by then, I kind of already moved on to the video game, like Super Nintendo and all that.
Yeah.
So I never played Myst, but I've heard it was.
Myst was gorgeous, and what was crazy is that where I'm from in Spokane, Washington, where my parents lived and where they still live, if you were to walk behind my parents' house and you were just keep walking straight all the way through the woods for about half mile, you would be in the backyard of Cyan Studios, who created Myst.
No.
I had no idea until last winter they invited me for a tour there. They gave me the address. I'm like, hold up. That is right by where I grew up. And it turned out there they were. They'd been in that office
the whole
space.
Time.
Yeah. I had no idea, but they were in my backyard while I was playing their game. Then when I got to college, though, you know, I went to college in 2000 to 2004. Okay. No, I'm sorry. What am I talking about? Making myself a lot younger. 96 to 2000. There wasn't a lot of gaming during that time. You'd have like, you'd sometimes have computers in dorm rooms and stuff, but it wasn't very common. Or you'd see Super Nintendo or Sega Genesis or the first Xbox really at like frat parties and whatnot. You know, they'd be around, but it wasn't as much. So when I moved to LA, I got so immersed with acting, I wasn't really playing as much.
Okay.
So for a good like 6 years, I had kind of stopped gaming
as
much.
Okay, because that was my question. When you moved to LA, did you think, or did you even have a foresight that you were going to be creating a TV show, let alone a video game?
I thought I'd be creating a TV show at some point because that was a goal, but I didn't ever think it would have anything to do with video games.
So your
games.
Goal wasn't just to act, it was also to be a creator.
Yeah.
Okay.
Always, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, and you've been in LA since, when did you say you moved to LA?
2000.
So 2000.
This is my 17th year.
So walk me through that. So you graduate in Seattle, you graduate college in Seattle, then you moved to
Los
Angeles.
Loaded up my Jeep and I drove down here, didn't know anybody, and I moved in, actually, the day of me moving in is pretty great. I moved in on the day of Pride in West Hollywood, having no idea. And I have my Jeep and my U-Haul, and I'm just driving up, and there's nowhere to park. And
nowhere.
I see these guys, because it was Pride, these like a flock of 6 gay dudes walking out of my building, all with like Speedos and headdresses on and everything.
Muscles, probably.
So, muscles was the important part. They looked at me and they started to laugh and they're like, "You're moving in today?" So the 6, they're like, "This will be a lot faster if we help."
No.
So 6 men.
Amazing.
Grabbed all of my stuff, moved it up into my apartment. Took like 20 minutes.
Of course.
They're and I was
huge,
done.
Like they're muscle dudes.
And one of the guys came and brought me a bong, and he goes, "Now go have fun."
Did you have colored hair at the time as well?
No, I was blonde.
Okay. When did you start dyeing your hair? Because ever since I've known you for what, maybe 4 years now?
Probably.
Something like that. I think we met at like a Nerdist party or something like that. You've always had like a hair color.
Well, I was blonde up until about 2 years ago. So
you were always blonde up until 2 years ago?
Yeah. And it was the end of 2015, and I decided, oh, fuck it. I'm just going to dye it pink.
Okay.
So I took out all my hair extensions, and I just made it pink and went to Hawaii. And
for some reason, I don't remember you blonde, but it's probably just because I've seen you with colored hair for so long.
You know, it's funny. Different people in my life, depending on when they met me, don't recognize me based on my hair color.
Yeah.
So it's a little chameleon-ish. But then I went this dark purple about a year ago and never looked back.
Perfect. Purple is a great color. Purple is my favorite color. Also, I want to ask you this, because this is an interesting, and I always like to, you know, it says on your Wikipedia here, I don't know where it's at, but it says you were in an accident.
I was.
In 2007.
That's what got me gaming again.
That's what got you gaming again. Perfect. So let's talk real quick. So you got in an accident.
I did.
And then according to this, it's a thoracic outlet syndrome.
Yeah.
That's a real thing?
Yeah.
Can you tell me about this?
Yeah. So it's so what happened, I was on a stunt accident in a movie. I did a lot of horror movies, like okay. B-horror films. I think I did like 17 of them or something. But I jumped on an air ram. It was, we were done with principal photography, and it was this behind the scenes come if you want day kind of thing. I'm like, of course I'll go, you know. Oh, you no. want to be involved.
Yeah.
And this little thing was air ram, and you jump on it, has hydraulics, and they use it for explosions or something in movies to fling the stunt actors. I stepped on it, and you're supposed to have a moment to get ready, but it just went off immediately. So I went up about 10-15 feet in the air and then fell directly on my head. At the time, my current fiance and I had only been dating for 8 months. So he is amazing. he watched the whole thing happen. Because I'm a bit of a tough girl, I decided I'm just going to get up. So I stood up, and I've never been in so much pain. And I thought I was going to faint, and I was walking around. They put ice on me immediately. I mean, you can see as we're sitting here, I still have ice packs to this day, and it's 10 years later. But we thought, you know, I thought I can walk, I'll be fine. So, and I could, I walked around and I was okay. And I didn't think there was anything really wrong. And then that night he and I were supposed to go to a concert. So he dropped me off at my house. And when he came back, I was putting on mascara in like my bathroom mirror, and I just fainted. And he's like, holy shit, took me to the emergency room. You know, I was in like a dress and half makeup. I look like Clockwork Orange, you know, one eye is done and the other is not. And they did x-rays, and I'm looking at the doctor, and he's looking at the x-ray, and he keeps looking at me, and I realize I still have my metal hair extensions in.
No.
So he's looking at it, and he's like, what is this? It looks like I have shrapnel, like, all over my head. And he goes, I can't see what's going on in here, and you can't get an MRI because you have metal in your head. So he did say your neck is so straight right now. It's like stick straight. You have a massive sprain. He gave me a neck brace and sent me home. About a week later, I could barely move. I was in so much pain. I couldn't, like, my left arm, I could barely lift. I was getting like tingles down it and stuff. It was really frightening. It was about 5 a.m. and I got up and I went into the kitchen and I opened up the cabinet and I went to go grab for a drink in kind of a higher up shelf. And when I did, I just started, my eyes just went darker, darker, darker. And I could feel myself blinking, but I was completely blind. I couldn't see anything. It's like, what the hell is going on? So not knowing where I was, I started calling for my dad, who lives in Washington State. Yeah. I had no clue where I was. I'm like, dad, dad. And then Mike came out, my fiance, and he goes, my boyfriend at the time, he comes out and he goes, what's going on? I said, I can't see. And he says, your eyes are open. I said, I know, because I could feel myself crying. So he laid me down flat, and I just laid there until I could get my consciousness back, and I finally saw again. So I was terrified of the dark for the longest time because it was terrifying. We went immediately to the emergency room. They ran all these tests. They didn't know what's going on. So I didn't have a doctor at the time, so I had to get an appointment with the doctor. I only had an HMO, and you couldn't get a doctor's appointment until 2 months out. So I didn't have any doctor. So I was just in and out of emergency rooms, in and out, in and out, in and out. When I finally saw the doctor, she, you know, had put me on some medication and said, you know, you got to get the stuff out of your head. I'm also allergic to pain medications.
So wait, what was in your head? Metal extensions.
Yeah. And I couldn't find any. Well, I couldn't find anyone to take them out because they thought it was a liability, because I'm walking up with a neck brace being to a hair salon.
What do you mean metal extensions? Like clips?
Oh yeah. They're like little. They're like little tubes, like little metal clips. I don't use them anymore
so
due to those.
How hard is it to remove them? Hard, apparently?
Well, not too hard, actually. It's just that no one would do it because I had a neck brace.
Oh, okay.
So everyone was like, no. So I finally found somebody who would sign a liability form and take them out of my head.
Okay.
So I finally did have them out. They did MRIs and x-rays. I saw a million doctors. I saw so many doctors. I mean, it's a fair thing to say that I have seen hundreds of doctors. That is, I have definitely seen hundreds of doctors in this city. They have told me a variety of things. They had told me that I broke it, that I fractured it, that I screwed up one of my vertebrae, that I had a herniation, that I had a rupture. Like, there was a million different things they said. And I went to one doctor and he said, well, your first rib in your clavicle, 4 years later, by the way, your first rib in your clavicle are pinching a major artery.
Just 4 years after you jumped off the thing.
Yeah, and I was still dealing with pain. And they said, okay, well, your first rib and your clavicle are pinching a major artery that goes down your arm. That's why you're losing feeling in it. We have to remove the rib. So I, okay. So they removed the rib, half of it. And I tried to keep it, but they told me it was a biohazard. So are babies, right? Like,
they wouldn't let you keep it?
No.
It's like a mechanic that are supposed to let you keep everything they take out of your car.
I wanted to put out my mantle and start a new world or
something.
What
does that even mean?
Means a baby to me. I was like, that's a baby.
A biohazard.
Yeah, like they wouldn't let me keep it. So,
like, you're radioactive inside? What is that?
Yes, they wouldn't let me keep my rib. So I I gave my rib up. It is somewhere. Ugh. Who knows where it is. But yeah, they took it out and it temporarily had relief, but the muscles underneath it have never really fully healed.
Oh,
so
okay.
I still deal
still
with it.
Pain.
And yeah, I still have, at the beginning of this year, I re-ruptured one of the discs in my neck. So I was right before we were filming, in February, I re-ruptured it. So I was undergoing 3 rounds of steroids treatments, epidurals right before we were filming. And I'm the lead female in the series.
Yeah. 10 years later, you're still
dealing with it.
Can't fix it.
No.
Isn't that weird? It's 2017 and they
can't figure it out. It's the weirdest thing. And I don't want to go back under surgery. I mean,
you
kind of just got to deal with it. And, you know, mostly I just got to get stronger. Yeah. You know, I've just been so busy with everything else trying to be like, all right, not getting any younger. I need to make this shit happen in Hollywood. And then I need to get taken care of the body. So get stronger.
And that got you back into gaming when you were...
Right, because I didn't have anything to do. So I was just laying on the couch, bored, had nothing to do. And Mike, you know, I ripped through God of War and God of War 2 and was just super into it. And Mike was seeing I was finishing the games too fast. He said, well, I got to find a game she can't finish. So he gave me World of Warcraft. And in that game, there's a character named Lady Sylvanas who loses her body. And her quest is to get her body back. So to me, that really resonated. And I thought, I started to talk about it. And the movie that I got heard on came out and I was at a Fangoria festival and some guy from Fangoria asked me about, you know, video games. And I said, I play World of Warcraft. He didn't believe me. Yeah. And that was the first time that I had ever encountered. I didn't know it was like a weird, like, girls play games thing.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was a weird, like, when I was growing up, we were all just kids and playing games. Like, who cares? But this was the first time I was ever met with the shock or doubt that I played. And as we started talking, he realized I really did play and I was really into it. And it sort of became this narrative that got out into the public that people started contacting me saying, you play World of Warcraft. And, you know, after a while, I started writing articles. I started reviewing games. I started, I was working for Nerdist and Hello Giggles and just a bunch of different outlets and doing everything I could as much as I could. I really loved gaming. It was a big escape for me. I met so many friends during that time period when I was injured, and it was a refuge for me. I didn't have anything else. So it was just, and it allowed me and Mike to do something together too, because World of Warcraft you can play together. You know, it's an online game, so we played together. And actually, to this day, one of the most special things that ever happened was after I made a relationship with Blizzard Entertainment, they asked me to host BlizzCon. In 2014. This will be my fourth year returning.
Oh, wow. And BlizzCon's like the major thing, right?
It's got like 30,000 people. They've had like the Foo Fighters and Metallica play at it. It's crazy. And all the big esports events go on, like 5 different esports tournaments happen in one building over one weekend.
Oh, wow.
So it's crazy. So I got to do the live broadcast the first year with Jeff Keighley and the second year with Alex Albrecht and Malik Forte. It was just the best. They asked me to do it, and I just really got into it. So after I'd formed a relationship with Blizzard, I remember our house had actually flooded, this old house that we had. It flooded, and we didn't have a place to stay for about 3 months. And the guys over at Blizzard sent me a letter, and it had a little house in their new expansion. And they said, even if you can't find a house, you always have a home in Azeroth.
Oh, wow.
I'll cry. It's like the sweetest thing. So they made a little... pagoda for me and Mike, and we're little these anthropomorphic panda people, and they put our two cats in it too. So you can actually like visit the game and see our characters still to this day.
It's interesting how communities can build, you can get involved in communities or friends and things like that, and they just do amazing, you know what I mean? Like, it's interesting how the course of events,
yeah,
you know, especially like, you know, from coming from Spokane to Seattle to LA, you know, trying to do a thing, and then you get hurt, and then you go through all this stuff, but then you meet and you make a show, you know, from that,
yeah,
you got a show coming out.
Yeah.
How many people want a show, let alone how many people want to make a video game?
Yeah.
You know,
and it's
interesting how when you backtrack where you are and realize you wouldn't be there if it wasn't for everything that happened.
Yeah.
You know?
I used to always say, like, for a long time, I used to say if I could take back one day, it would be that day. But I don't say that anymore because had that day not happened, I wouldn't have everything I have right now.
I mean, probably playing, you know, as cliche as it is, they say the couples that play together stay together.
Yeah.
As cheesy as that is. You know what I mean? Played video game, you know, it might, I don't know. It's weird. Life is weird.
It is. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Life is weird, and I always love hearing people's stories and figuring things, you know, because it's exactly
It's weird, though. It is a weird, like, backtrack. You're right. Weird. It's like this weird connecting of dots going, wait, what? And then, you know, I always had the goal of getting back to where I was.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get my body back, get my world back, get back to where, to everything where it all begun.
And I think that there's definitely, that's always a positive, but there's also that, you know, so many people want to go back to how they were because things were better yesterday or whatever, instead of building forward, much like you have, and creating something even bigger and better than, you know, going backwards, you know?
Totally. Yeah. Because a lot of times people just go, you're right. They just go right back to their old thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I kind of combined it. And I thought, well, how do we mesh this all together? And created this really cool, fun thing out of it and got, you know, starring in it, executive producing, co-creating, and made a game.
And once again, tell everybody what it is, how they can watch it, where they can watch it. They can watch it.
You can watch it starting
all at once,
on,
or you can buy individual episodes.
It starts on August 30th, which might be today, depending on when you get this podcast up. But August 30th on the Game Grumps channel for YouTube Red. And the first episode is free. And the second episode will come out the same day. But you must have a YouTube Red subscription. If it's not available in your country, you can buy it on individual episodes or on Google Play. So individual episodes from YouTube or individual episodes from Google Play. And then the rest of the episodes will come out once a week on Wednesdays for the remaining weeks of September.
And where can everybody find you online?
At Michelle Morrow, and Michelle is spelled with one L.
One L, ladies and gentlemen. I learned this about a week ago.
Razzle has only one L.
Via some caps locks shouting, I believe. I don't know.
Our text chain, everybody only has one L.
Everyone and has one L in their name.
Yeah.
Which it was the one L gang or whatever. You changed it to that, and I thought that was just because of your name. And then it took me a little bit before I realized that everybody in this group thread has one L in our name. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wild stuff.
I know.
Wild stuff. Michelle, thank you so much for doing the show. Everybody watch the show and buy the show. Watch the show and then buy them individually anyways, because I'm sure, you know, YouTube looks at that and then they'll
Yeah, and if you get YouTube Red, then you don't have to watch any ads on YouTube ever, which for me, I know, and this is no pitch for YouTube Red, believe me, I just say from my own experience, I watch a lot of YouTube videos, and if you count the amount of time you spend watching advertisements, it has saved me a lot of time in a month.
It's like getting gas.
Yeah.
You know, that's why electric cars are eventually going to be a thing in the future.
That's correct,
I waste so much time getting gas.
I agree.
Ladies and gentlemen, Michelle Morrow, watch the show and follow her on the internet. She's really cool.
Thanks, Razzle.
Alrighty, thank you. That's it. Bye.